There is plenty of research that backs up the importance of good childcare. In order to work, parents need quality and affordable childcare that is as much about learning as it is about keeping kids safe. But Alaska families are struggling to find that type of care for their kids. What are elected leaders and businesses doing to address the need? We'll ask advocates today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Every day, when they head to their jobs, parents and guardians need to know that their children are safe, well-nourished, and engaged at their child care facility. That might be grandma or auntie's house, it may be a licensed daycare, or in the case of too many families in Alaska, it means constant stress from trying to find and afford quality care for children so parents can work. The Alaska House passed Bill 89 that aims to help families access more child care options through a few different pathways that we'll discuss today. The Senate will next take up that legislation. So if the Senate passes the bill and the governor signs it, how much relief will it provide and what else is needed? Here to help answer those questions is Katie Capozzi. Katie is the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber and a member of the governor's task force on child care. Thanks for being here, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
So good to have you in the studio. Also with us on the line today is Stephanie Berglund. Stephanie is the CEO of THREAD, a child care resource and referral network across the state. And Stephanie is also a member of the governor's task force on child care. Thanks so much, Stephanie, for being on hand today.
Thank you for having me.
You can also join us, Alaskans. Have you struggled to find childcare in your community? Have you had to miss work or decline a job because of a lack of quality childcare? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Katie, I want to start with you. Some people may be puzzled as to why the president of the chamber would be working on child care concerns. So tell us about why and when you got involved in this effort.
Yes, I actually found myself puzzled for a little while at first, but here we are, and I'm really proud to be working on this issue. So I would say this kind of came to light through COVID. People were struggling to find childcare throughout the pandemic, and I had really not heard from my members before then, so I just kind of chalked it up to I didn't hear from my members on childcare issues until COVID hit. And so I chalked it up to just the crisis that we were all dealing with. It wasn't just childcare, it was all sorts of things. And then sort of as things led up and, you know, business opened back up in Alaska, this conversation just kept bubbling up, this issue of lack of childcare and then also the affordability issue. And so, you know, I started paying a little bit closer attention. And then really what kind of broke this whole thing open for the Alaska Chamber is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation approached us and asked if we could partner on a study called the Untapped Potential Report. And they had done these reports in a couple of other states pre-pandemic because child care, turns out, actually has been an issue for a really long time for the workforce. And it's just not something we were talking about in Alaska. I honestly don't know why they approached Alaska to do this report. There was a small handful of states that they did. But, you know, I said, sure, we'll go ahead and do this report. I don't think it's going to probably, you know, we're not going to find out anything new and interesting, but that we don't already know. But sure, let's do that. And so I reached out to THREAD, actually, and we didn't know each other from the man on the moon, Stephanie and I, but we know that we needed to partner with a child care advocacy group to be able to kind of get out the word for this survey. Long story short, we conduct the survey, we release the results, a couple press releases go out, and my phone started ringing immediately from not just the media, but my own membership saying, thank you so much for doing this. This is kind of blowing up this issue that we really need to be talking about. And I think it provided the membership, my board of directors cover, and the proof that this was a problem, not just member to member, but across the entire state. And it gave me the license to be able to start talking about this a little bit more, learning about it more from the membership, you know, it impacts a small business way different than a big business and what that all looks like. So from there, I just kind of had my marching orders and jumped right in. And I sit on a task force with the U.S. Chamber. I sit on the governor's task force. I've spent more time on child care than I could have ever imagined when I began this role in April of 2019. So that's how we're in. This is an economic issue. This is how the chamber views it. This is preventing people from entering the workforce. We want to do anything we can to help people get to work.
And following up there, you had said previously that it's one of the top concerns of your members. What do they say about how this lack affects the workforce and their output, their productivity in their businesses?
Yeah, there's just, you know, we've surveyed on this. We've done it, you know, kind of unofficially through just surveying the board and the membership. But we've also done it officially through, no kidding, public opinion surveys, through pollsters and everything. So we have kind of good data sets on not just the business problem, but just the entire community, the entire state of Alaska. And they're saying that, you know, people are missing work. They're having a hard time retaining people because of lack of access, and that the affordability issue is a problem as well. So I think it's recruitment and retention seems to be the big thing. They're losing out on a lot of working parents who aren't able to make it work.
Yeah, so stressful. Stephanie, you were cited in a Newsminer article from last summer saying before the pandemic, one in five families faced a lack of childcare, and that more than 60% of Alaskans live in areas considered childcare deserts. Tell us how a childcare desert is defined and how the provider landscape has changed since the pandemic.
Thank you. Childcare is still very much in crisis, and it's been a challenged sector for many years, decades really, but we have seen that unfortunately get worse during the pandemic. And there's been lots of focus on that, especially how it's more severely impacting the larger workforce, as Katie mentioned. So a childcare desert is defined where there's really kind of a certain percentage of more children in a community who need care than there is, you know, available care provided. So I think there's a ratio defined that I don't have in front of me, but it's really highlighting that there's a significant gap in need. Some of the recent studies that we have demonstrate that there's actually a 60% gap in most communities across the state between the licensed and regulated childcare spaces we have, based on what we know is the demand. Katie talked about several of the studies that have been conducted of businesses. We've also been conducting surveys with families and have similar data that the lack of childcare is now inhibiting 51% of working from families from participating in the workforce, either at all or to the extent that they want. So you cited the statistic of the one in five. So before the pandemic, the family survey that we conducted in 2019 demonstrated that it was about 22%, and now it's 51%. So we are seeing a huge gap in the demand and the supply of childcare across the state.
And I think a childcare desert is defined, if I'm understanding this correctly, mm-hmm. as having more than 50 children under the age of five with no provider available.
Right.
Yeah, there's a few different ways that people define a childcare desert, but that's in essence what it is.
All right. Yeah, go ahead, Stephanie.
I was going to add, thank you, that you know, some areas that we're seeing that get worse. Like I said, we haven't conducted the actual childcare desert landscapes to statistic to map that for, you know, post-pandemic percentages. But we know places like, even in our smallest communities, like Valdez during the pandemic, you know, they lost their only, you know, full day childcare program in the community. Ketchikan, for example, has lost 50% of their childcare spaces in the last 4 years. So we've seen a decline overall. We've seen 148 small businesses of childcare programs closed throughout the state. And we're not seeing the rate of new programs start up. So overall, we still have a significant net loss of spaces that are needed.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about the need for childcare options, affordable, quality childcare options for Alaska families. And we're talking with members of the Governor's Task Force on Childcare. Katie Capozzi is the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber and also a member of the Governor's Task Force. And Stephanie Berglund is the CEO of THREAD, a childcare resource and referral network across Alaska, and is also on the task force. You can join our conversations if you have questions or comments at 1-800-478-8255. That's the number statewide, 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Stephanie, staying with you for a moment, describe the task force. It was created nearly a year ago, April of 2023. Tell us why it was formed and what your role is specifically on it.
Thank you. Well, we're really excited to see the governor form the task force and are happy to see the state really look at unpacking the needs of childcare more than ever before. The purpose of the task force is to develop a plan to help improve the availability and affordability of quality of childcare across the state. And our specific task is to develop policy recommendations for the governor with those goals, you know, of helping to provide specific recommendations for increasing that access to high quality childcare for Alaskan families. So my role is a member. I'm representing the seat of a nonprofit that is serving licensed childcare providers and programs across the state.
So, Katie, pick it up there about your role on the task force. And when I think about policy recommendations and other things that will come out of this, what we're talking about is money. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be a need for funding, and we see the challenges that the state already has budget-wise. Talk about your role and then your level of optimism, hopefully, for what could happen in the future.
Yeah. So I represent the broader business community on the task force. So it's, I guess, kind of a unique role. I'm surrounded by incredible subject matter experts in the childcare world. I am not that. I come through the lens of, you know, the greater kind of employer viewpoint. So it's been an interesting spot for me. I've learned so much. I still don't know all the acronyms, but I've got people like Stephanie and the other experts on the task force that help me along. Yes, you're right. This all takes a lot of investment. And I think this is the sort of thing that, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And that's part of what the task force is doing. We're taking these little buckets and we're looking at areas where we can make even just the smallest of improvements. And so I'm really proud of the work that we've accomplished to date. We had a first set of recommendations that went to the governor at the end of the year. Frankly, there are, you know, most of them kind of very regulatory in nature, what kind of tweaks we can do, things that don't actually cost money. Mm-hmm. But then there's things like HB 89, that there is investment that goes along with that. There's the governor's new Alaska Affordability Act, which includes tax credits for businesses who invest in childcare, up to 50% tax credits for businesses that are corporate income taxpayers. That's investment. If that actually got maxed out, if that program got maxed out, that's $237 million that would, you know, employers could spend towards solving this crisis. So
instead of taxes.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, that's one of these kind of approaches, like let the private sector try to help out here where government maybe can't pivot as quickly. I think the more difficult work is coming with the second part of this task force. I mean, that's where we're going to look at the true cost of care in Alaska. And we'll have, you know, pretty difficult discussions in terms of what will this cost? What's the number and how can we get there? But again, this is a situation where everyone needs to chip in. We cannot expect government to solve this problem for us, and it's an all hands on deck situation.
This is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking about the need for childcare in the state. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Katie Capozzi and Stephanie Berglund, both members of the Governor's Task Force on Child Care. And Katie is the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber. Stephanie is the CEO of THREAD, a child care resource organization in Alaska. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones. Tracy is in Kotzebue. Hello, Tracy.
Hello. I just wanted to call in and send some huge appreciation out to the task force and all the work they're doing, to all of our representatives who passed House Bill 89, and to THRED for all of their unwavering support. So my daughter and I opened a licensed childcare in Kotzebue this summer. It's the first one for kids birth to five since about 2011, and we really wanted to get us on the map and kind of start the ball rolling to get a larger community-based center for childcare here. So, you know, we're operating, but there's so much more need. And we really see, like, I really see the need for, you know, economic development and people getting to work. I mean, these are huge issues, and it's so hard, and it all boils down to childcare. So it is expensive. It's expensive to operate. It's quite a challenge to make sure I have funding coming in to cover my staffing needs. But I think the biggest question when we look at childcare is, what does it cost us to not have it? And, you know, that's it costs all of our community something. I know there's not like a dollar you can always put on it because we're not necessarily manufacturing communities, but there's a lot of people not getting to do what they need to do for our community because there's no childcare. So.
Well, Tracy, I'm so happy that you've had success. We talked, I don't know, months or maybe a year ago about your work in this regard and your efforts to help streamline some of what it takes, especially in rural areas of the state, to get the licensing paperwork done. Do you see coming out of the task force recommendations that will help exactly with what you dealt with?
Yes, I do. I feel that it's just been, the timing has all been very auspicious because I feel heard. You know, I feel like people have been listening because we've been not just going through the process, but, you know, just pointing out things like, this couldn't happen if I was in a village. This couldn't happen if I was in Norvik. And, you know, even now we're getting ready to have our first child that's in OCS custody. So we're working on how much you get paid by the state for child care assistance. And we get paid the same as Nome versus the North Slope. And it's a lot cheaper to live in Nome than it is in Kotzebue. You know, so there's just all these little things that people don't, maybe are not aware of the fact that absolutely we have to keep kids safe. That's the first and biggest priority. But if you have regulations that are so restrictive you can't operate, then that's not okay.
Looking
at the process.
Kind of self-defeating then if it's too rigid. It seems right. Like there's a real need for balance. Of course, you want kids to be safe, and you also need successful facilities to be able to keep kids safe. So thank you so much for your call. I saw Katie taking some notes as you were talking, so that's good. And good luck as you're right. Carrying on there. Thanks so much, Tracy.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Stephanie, I wanted to go back to you. What are your thoughts about what's been released so far? The initial recommendations were broken down into five focus areas: background checks, licensing, workforce, employers, tribal authority. Talk a little bit about what you think about these areas and how the work has advanced to this point.
Great. Well, this is great, especially following Tracy's remarks, and so happy to hear an update of her program and how it's going in Kotzebue. I think one of the things that's been really powerful, and Katie hit on this, is that we have really a broad representation on the task force and representatives from across the state and from across different sectors. And there are 33 recommendations in the first report, and things like the background checks and looking at how we can reduce barriers to background checks and licensing, you know, have been a big focus and topic of conversation. So related to background checks, there's five recommendations that really help in reducing some of the barriers to processing background checks and ultimately increase more timely and efficient and affordable background checks. So we're not looking at reducing what's required in a background check, but just really helping with that access. So an example is moving away from manual fingerprint processing and using more digital technology, and looking at how we can broaden those with physical machines across the state will help people like Tracy in Kotzebue and other remote communities, you know, really increase that access. And then with licensing, you know, we looked at and have recommendations. There's eight recommendations around licensing for really training childcare licensing staff to support really consistent technical assistance and accountability, helping new programs like Tracy's start up across the state. In essence, we want to make the licensing process more user-friendly, you know, again, using online electronic applications, forms, and processing, and then, you know, really helping with some on-ramp support. You know, there are regulations required, as we were just talking about. It's important to ensure the health and safety of children. And so looking at how there can be some more navigation support to help more entrepreneurs start up in childcare. For workforce, there's a lot of conversation about workforce. This is an important area that the task force has been looking at. And so this area has the most recommendations. There's 14 recommendations, and they include things like strengthening pathways for professional development for childcare employees, like looking at their administrator qualifications and really how we can strengthen more of a pipeline of education supports, looking at how we can expand services and supports to professional development, including helping those business administrators with kind of fundamentals of business management and administration. And then also looking at how to access more specialized service supports like infant, early childhood mental health, really to build early educator skills around children with more challenging behaviors. You know, we're looking at how we can, the recommendations include how to add more benefits for the childcare workforce and recognition. So, one area that we focused quite a bit on was the notion of creating a sustainable state-funded wage subsidy program. That's important as early educators are professionals, and also looking at how we can develop an insurance network for them so they can also have benefits as part of their living wage. Some things we talked about in the recommendations are exploring a substitute pool, and also looking at benefits related to childcare assistance, really the subsidy for employees working in childcare, maybe to support funding for their own children. And then, you know, a theme that we heard is really how can we help overall professionalize childcare? We heard that recognizing them as essential workers and adopting best practice language when we're addressing the childcare sector. And then there were four recommendations related to employer-sponsored childcare. And looking at how we can assist businesses to provide on-site and near-site childcare, how we can also include and consider capital funding and tax credits and incentives, which has already started and underway, as we talked about, and encourage the private sector to create more childcare facilities. And then the area also included recommendations related to tribal authority. There's two recommendations where we are looking at how childcare can work with the federal childcare offices to accept tribal approved health and safety standards. That's important so that all of our facilities in Alaska can create pathways for tribal childcare programs and parents to also access more state and federal support.
Thank you so much for breaking that down for us, Stephanie. Katie, I want to back up a little bit to the employers piece of this. You had talked about a business that actually took this on and did it in a way that works, a credit union that built childcare space into their building. So it was like part of the initial plan. Tell us about this and how it differs from other settings that you've seen where employers are trying to help their employees.
Yeah, and Stephanie might be able to back me up where maybe some of my details are incorrect, because actually she's the one who let me know that Credit Union One here in Anchorage is doing this program. They're actually not a member of the Alaska Chamber. So this was news to me, but they probably 15 or so years ago, this was part of their plan. They knew they were building the building, and the president at the time said, if we're going to attract, recruit, retain, this is something that we should have. And so it was part of the building, and which made it a lot easier. It's a lot easier to build your building and have childcare and the things that need to happen to make a licensed childcare facility when you're building than trying to go and refurbish, which is what we're kind of learning, you know, through the task force and in talking to my members who are taking a look at this themselves. It's pretty hard to go refurbish a space and kind of check off all of the requirements for licensed childcare facilities. So they did this. The employees there are employees of Credit Union One. They have all the benefits. They are paid like, you know, regular employees. And, you know, one of my very favorite, we've heard from the president of Credit Union One, Mark Burgess, a couple times on the task force he presented. And one of my favorite stories that he has is actually one of the very first kiddos that kind of came up through their childcare system actually works at the bank now. So talk wow. about like super visionary workforce development. Yeah. Get them in when they're infants and get them to come work for you eventually. So in my opinion, this is kind of the gold standard of what an employer could do. It of course, I mean, they viewed this as an investment sure. and part of their business strategy. And I think a lot of employers now are starting to understand that this needs to be part of their bottom line and get included in the budget, essentially, is how they can support that infrastructure within their own companies. And it's going to look different for every single company.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly a smashing success, but they designed a building. Most businesses are, you know, don't have the luxury of building a new place. They have to retrofit. And I know that you had said that can be really difficult. Is it mainly the cost of retrofitting, or is it the insurance and staffing? I mean, when you're trying to run a business that is completely separate from the one that you have.
Right.
And so now you have to develop protocols and policies for a completely different type of business. What are the biggest hesitations for the business community?
I think a lot of it is fear of the unknown. So they ex-business, they're really good at selling widgets, and they don't want to get into the childcare business. That's not what they ever started to do. And so it's just kind of the hesitation, and they are thinking about insurance and they're thinking about liability. And so, you know, one of the goals I see for myself is to help them understand what is possible. Yes, there's a cost associated with it. We know that. But from a regulatory standpoint and some of the, you know, improvements and the recommendations we're making at the task force, I think will make it easier for businesses to do this if they choose. So I think a lot of it is fear of the unknown. Then there, of course, is the investment decision. And then, you know, who is going to pay the bills? Or, you know, every business has a different way of making money. So is it your customers that are going to ultimately, you know, end up paying a higher price so that you can fund childcare if you're a regulated business, for example? Is it ratepayers who are going to, you know, there's just all of these questions in terms of, does this pass the red face test? They know that they need to help solve this problem, but I think they're mostly kind of scared, a little bit less about money, a little bit more about, do we really want to take this on? And suddenly they feel like they might be getting into the childcare industry where we're trying to present. I think there's so many other opportunities and examples of employers where, you know, it's a nonprofit that comes in and runs the childcare facility and can assist in that. So we're trying to make sure the business community understands there's multiple options.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the need for quality, affordable childcare in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the need for affordable, quality childcare in Alaska, and we're talking with members of the Governor's Task Force on Childcare. Katie Capozzi is the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber, and Stephanie Berglund is the CEO of THREAD, a childcare resource and referral network across the state. Both are also members of the Governor's Task Force on Childcare. You can join our conversation if you have been having similar struggles in your community, or maybe you've found some solutions and you'd like to share those. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. So I think, Katie, it was you that mentioned there is another step that's going to be taking place now is working on cataloging the true cost of care. So what are you looking at that goes into capturing those costs?
That's a great question, and I'm going to punt it to Stephanie because I think she probably has a much better grasp on all the different aspects that we're looking at. Stephanie, am I putting you on the spot there?
No, thanks, Katie. Yeah, I'm really excited that the state has decided to conduct this study. So they're partnering with the McKinley Group to do a comprehensive cost of care study and really looking at what does it cost for the true cost of care. And the purpose behind that is We all know that childcare is very expensive. We talk all the time that it's really unaffordable to families. Right now, families are, paying anywhere from 15 to 34% of their household income on childcare. For many, it's their highest expense in their household. So we know that it's expensive, but that's based on the market price, really what the price that childcare businesses are setting. And but then we hear that childcare programs, and we know these small businesses are struggling and are unable to, for example, to pay the workforce more than we know that they need and deserve. So it's expensive to run a childcare program, and we know that it is more than the market price. So this is a study really to unpack all of the business expenses, including the things that we already highlighted of, facilities, insurance, ensuring, meeting all of the important licensing regulations and codes. But then beyond that, looking at how we can pay the workforce a livable and hopefully thriving wage, offer full benefits, and the professional development and workforce supports needed to ensure that high quality care and education is happening in all programs. So they're coming up with really a formula in the sense that will help better define and articulate what the true cost of care is. They're also looking at it with respect to geography across the state, because we know those costs are much different.
So, in working on capturing that cost, we know that socializing and education is an important part of quality childcare. Your number, Stephanie, last year in the Newsminer article said only 23% of Alaska kids are able to access early childhood programs. What does your research say about the impact on their formal education if they start school without going to Head Start or other preschool education programs? And is there a way to capture that future expense in, if kids aren't fully prepared and they start school and they struggle? There's a lot of research into that. Will you capture some of that potential future expense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's my understanding that the cost of care is really looking at the business model of running a childcare program, and the day-to-day expense so that it's sustainable and viable and, thriving and available how we need it across the state. I think what you're getting at is really looking at the economic impact overall of the importance of investing in childcare. And THRED does conduct an economic impact study. We try to do it every 3 or 4 years. And ironically, we conducted the last one at the very end of 2019 and then just published a new one this fall. So we really have strong data that's bookending, the time during the pandemic. And so we do, have more data and are capturing what that economic impact is. I think what you're getting at is, when we know children don't have a healthy start, whether at home with adversity or family stress, or not having access to formal early care and learning supports such as community-based childcare, we know that that just sets them up for more struggle, throughout their trajectory of school and in life. So, for example, a statistic that's remained pretty consistent is only 33% of our entering kindergartners are considered prepared by our State Department of Education and Early Development. So that means a majority of kids are showing up, not able to follow directions, or have some of the fundamental early literacy skills, or some of the gross motor skills and fine motor skills and social emotional behavior skills that, help set them up for success starting in school. We know that that impacts then, how children interact with, maybe special needs services throughout school. It impacts third grade reading, it impacts eighth grade math, and ultimately graduation rates. So we want to set up children from the very beginning with the strongest supports possible. And we know that that includes quality childcare.
Absolutely. Katie, you wanted to follow up there.
Yeah, I kind of when I first started in this area of advocacy work, I thought that the arguments that Stephanie just made were the most powerful ones. But what we've learned, you know, unfortunately, in the political arena, it's all about putting out the fire that's immediately in front of you. So I do think that's where it's been helpful for the business community, especially to weigh in right now and say, right now we have a crisis. This has to be addressed right now. Yes, we need to talk about what this will mean for an 18-year-old and, you know, future crime or, you know, whatever. But that's a much more difficult thing to quantify than here's our crisis right now. So I guess politically, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And hopefully we can get some real meaningful things done immediately.
And have you seen a shift in the business community's perception of, you know, really whose responsibility is this?
Yes.
From a time when probably most business owners thought, hey, those are your kids.
Yes.
You figure it out. Just get yourself to work on time. Is that changing?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, even just in my own board meetings, just the way the body language has shifted, excuse me, and the way the business community has become so much more comfortable talking about this. And, you know, I think they had this internal struggle. They knew this was a business issue, but they just weren't comfortable talking about it out loud. I think people view this as a mommy issue. And now it really is. Everyone is comfortable, I feel like, talking about this as a business issue. So it's been an incredible 3-year journey, that's for sure.
Well, that shows positive growth. And, you know, this is a societal issue. I mean, it benefits all of us if children do well, of course. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Austin is in Juneau. Hello, Austin.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about the struggles that we've had with childcare for a second grader and some of the solutions.
Sure.
That we found. Towards the beginning of the year, at the time, my wife and I were kind of alternating schedules, and I would work, kind of one half of the day, and she would either work or go to school the other half of the day, and we could kind of split, you know, the drop-off or the pickup and the watching of the kid that way. We didn't have the ability at that time to sign up for one of the programs here in Juneau. Is called Rally, which watches the kids after school until work is done. My wife got a job later that would allow us to be able to afford that. It's kind of expensive, but what we found is that the entire program was all full up at that time. So they put on us on a wait list, and we had been on a wait list for probably 4 or 5 months. And finally, I guess at that point, we found out that the school district was going to be multi-million dollars in deficit unless the BSA was increased potentially the American Rescue Plan Act funds released from the state to the Juneau School District. So effectively, there's a hiring freeze. They won't hire any new people for the program for watching kids after school. So that makes it pretty difficult. So we've kind of had to resort to finding high schoolers that might be available to watch our kid after school, which is sometimes difficult too, because the high school actually gets out of school later than the elementary school does.
So you've been just sort of piecing it together as you can.
So every day is a little bit different solution.
That sounds really stressful.
It's a crazy schedule all the time.
That sounds super stressful, Austin. And I think it probably is representative of a lot of families and the struggles that they're having. So sorry that it's difficult, and I hope that you can find a stable, more stable path and reliable setting. Thanks so much for the call. It was good to hear from Austin, because I think that really does capture so much of what we're talking about and the struggles that people have, and just sort of putting it together day by day like that. That's got to be really stressful.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to be sure I touched on before the program ends is last year in our public opinion survey, we asked a pretty broad question. Have you missed out on work, chosen not to work, or missed work based off of the lack of affordability or access to childcare? And I think it was close to 40% answered yes. And the most fascinating thing to me that I try to point out as often as I can is, yes, there is an income disparity. There's no doubt about it. So the less you make, the more you've had to miss out on work or choose not to work. But even for the highest income earners, their rate of missing out on work was over 30%. And so that's something I've really tried to push out to my membership as well. I think another misconception is, well, you know, some say we pay our people very well. This should not be a problem. And this has kind of opened up their eyes to say this. You know, affordability is a big chunk of this, but also access. Yeah. If the slots don't exist, it doesn't matter if you're paying your people $1 million a year. The slots don't exist. And so that was an eye-opening statistic for me, and I think something that's really struck a lot of people as well.
Well, those statistics are definitely alarming that, you know, in some cases, almost half of folks have either missed work or had to decline a job, and even high-income earners have. A large percentage, 30% of them, have had similar struggles. You had talked a little bit about this untapped potential report. This seems like a good time to kind of delve in a little deeper there on that.
Yeah. So what the purpose of the report is to kind of see what are we missing out on economically by people choosing not to enter the workforce. And so Alaska is a little bit of a more difficult spot to look at because there's no income taxes. So a lot of times they're looking at taxes as one of the ways to measure that. But so again, this study was conducted in fall of 2021. So we're still kind of dealing with a lot of the aftermath of COVID. But the findings were $237 million are not in the Alaska economy because of lack of access.
Annually?
Yep. And then I think, again, kind of, you know, with my Alaska Chamber hat on and thinking about employers, I think it was something like, and I'll pull it up before we end the program today to make sure I'm right, something like, employers are spending $50 million a year on the recruitment and retention. So they're losing people. They're spending $50 million getting new people in the door. And so that's kind of one of those like, oh, yep, okay. It's another data point that I think makes the business community feel like empowered to talk about this. Like, this is how much it's costing the business community just to get new people in the door because we've lost people because they're unable to access quality, affordable childcare.
That really seems so important that you can give hard numbers to folks who are used to dealing with, you know, numbers when they're talking about business and seeing that, I'm sure, is very helpful. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the need for quality, affordable childcare in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are going to go back to the phones and talk with Susan in Juneau. Hello, Susan.
Hi, good morning. I think I'm going to be offering here a minority opinion. My husband and I have chosen to be child-free, and I certainly don't mind my tax dollars going to help low-income parents. But perhaps parents could take an opportunity to really think how many children they can afford. And can they afford for perhaps one of the parents to stay home when that child, before that child gets into school? Certainly, how many children you have is considered a very private decision. In reality, it's not. How many children you have impacts your community, the state, the country, the world. And we have evidence of this every single day with our rising population. So, that's my minority opinion. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call, Susan. You know, she's bringing up the fact that there are societal costs, especially if people do need help. And so has the task force thought about that or looked at that particular opinion?
The task force hasn't, but I can say that this exact topic came up when we did the untapped potential report and we had the initial rollout with even my board of directors, the very initial kind of look at the data. And there were some people who had, you know, the same opinion. By the way, Susan, I am also childless. And that surprises a lot of people. I think a lot of folks assume that the reason I'm passionate about this issue is because I have kiddos that I need taken care of. I really just want people to be able to get to work. So there is, I think, the balance that we need to think about. Yes, people can choose to stay home to raise their kids. They need to think about that, certainly, when they're deciding what to do about their families. But we also really want to get people into work if that's what they want to do. So if you want to, you know, if you want to engage in that way in your community, and that's a societal problem as well, we have people not entering the workforce, and we need people badly. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance.
And you talked a little bit about this earlier, but during the pandemic, childcare providers, this is just crazy to me, were not considered essential workers. It's just so ridiculous. If essential workers are essential and have to be at work, then they've got to have childcare. So have obvious problems like this been looked at and addressed? If there's another wide-ranging crisis, we hope there won't be, but if there is, will childcare providers be considered essential workers next time?
So that was one of our recommendations. That was kind of, I've got to say, the easiest one ever to vote on as a task force. Like, I did not know, I don't think, until we were sitting down at the table, that childcare employees were not considered essential during the pandemic. That is mind-blowing. I do know that the state is getting to work already on a lot of these recommendations. That's something that I think the general public probably doesn't realize, that some of these regulatory fixes that are easy fixes are happening. Stephanie might have an update on terms of, you know, if the wheels on the bus are already turning on this particular recommendation, but I think that's an easy button one for us to address.
Stephanie, you want to follow up there?
Thank you. I'm not aware of that specific one, but I know that there has been action around the licensing and the background check implementation that I talked about earlier. So a lot of the work that we've done to date is around focusing on the recommendations, and it has, and we have not talked as much about the implementation or financing of the recommendations.
Stephanie, on another note, how out of step with national pay rates is Alaska? A story that you were in cited an attrition rate for Alaska childcare workers at more than 60%, as opposed to 29% nationally.
Yes, the workforce is one of our primary concerns, both the early childhood workforce and as Katie and I have been talking about and share mutual interest on, you know, just the overall workforce. We can't support our overall workforce getting to work unless we support our childcare workforce and really that access and the supply of our small business childcare programs across the state. So the average wage of an early educator right now, I think, is $14.40. We know that's too low to recruit and retain a quality workforce. That's less than gas station attendants in Alaska right now. And in most positions, they do not have any benefits. So that means that they don't have paid leave. They don't have support through their employer to pay for health insurance or other supports. So that's a major concern when we've seen, you know, wages increase drastically, especially in similar sectors and in other care sectors. We've seen increases in even fast food and retail that, you know, are competitive now to the childcare workforce. So there's huge challenges in recruiting and retaining early educators, and we don't see how that will change. So we're really concerned about that. And while we've been talking, we're super excited about HB 89 and the Governor's Affordability Act. Both will engage more business investing and involvement, like we've been talking about. That's super exciting, more than we've ever seen before in Alaska. And it also supports that family affordability, but neither right now address, or frankly, I think will work without a focus on that supply building. So we need to find a way to ensure more support for these childcare small businesses and ensuring, you know, a high quality early childhood workforce. So even, you know, we talked about the more employer sponsored childcare. So even in the current employer sponsored childcare that we do have across the state, we're seeing that they have some of the same workforce struggles. So we have a large workforce issue that really is an area that Thread would like to see focused on more.
And Stephanie, just following up there quickly, nearly 90% of these workers noted burnout and exhaustion as reasons for leaving or closing their business. Do you know how this compares to maybe a decade ago? And is the fatigue mainly from a lack of adequate staffing?
It is. I think it has been increasing, you know, since in the last decade. We're seeing more turnover. We saw during the pandemic, like we did in many industries, you know, many of older employees kind of age out or choose to retire and transition. We saw others, like I mentioned, because of the low pay, you know, change jobs for higher pay. So, part of the studies that have been conducted for the task force, one of them was focus groups, and the focus groups identified that early educators, their number one need for more satisfaction and really stability in their jobs is more adequate staffing. You know, so just having enough staffing to support each other and support what they need to effectively do their jobs.
And we've been discussing childcare, but are preschools part of this consideration, or are there provisions that would help more parents be able to afford preschool? Katie?
Yeah. The,
or Stephanie, please.
Yep, Stephanie.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we have seen the Alaska Reads Act go into effect in Alaska that in essence helps to, you know, start to expand preschool across the state of Alaska. We're happy to see that. And we know that the preschool options we have across the state are great in expanding quality care and giving more families choice and options for care. I think the one challenge in our preschool structure is that preschools primarily are part day and part year. And we know for most families and working families that they want something that's, you know, for the full workday. And Austin talked about that earlier when he called in. And then also looking for something that's full year. So that works for some families. Again, you know, creating more choice and quality options is great. And we're looking for more innovation solutions to do that because we know there's such diverse and great need across the state.
And finally, what's next for the task force? When will you next meet? And what do you hope to be able to focus on in this next year?
Yeah, so we took, you know, we had our initial set of recommendations that came out at end of January and, you know, no rest for the weary. Our first meeting kind of for the second tranche started in January. So we are currently meeting right now. And we are essentially waiting on the final results of a couple of these reports surveys, I guess. And so that's really going to help guide the discussion and the next set of recommendations, which I think are due in July to the governor.
And Stephanie, your thoughts about what you'd like to see worked on next?
Yeah, I'm excited that we're going to continue to further identify areas that we can strengthen our child care assistance program, really dive into the affordability of child care. And then we're also going to be doing more in related to learning about how we can strengthen that access and the quality. So we don't want to create more child care without ensuring that it's the highest quality of care possible, again, to ensure our young children get the best and healthiest start. So we know that that includes, you know, looking at how to increase access for children with special needs, like I said, supporting more high quality care options, and looking at how there's more innovative models for, you know, how other states are sharing the cost of childcare.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, you had said in a previous interview that businesses should survey their employees to better understand how difficult maintaining good care is. We heard from Austin and Juno about the difficulty in just every day trying to find an available teenager to watch your children. That's very stressful. Has some of that happened? And have you seen results of some of those surveys and saw what they're hearing?
Yes, it has happened. And I think, you know, kind of going back to one of the best talking points I had to kind of convince employers that you need to meet them where they're at was our public opinion survey that we did last year that showed even the highest income earners are really struggling more than 30%. And so I know that employers have surveyed their employees. I'm not privy to the results, certainly, but I think it has completely opened up their eyes to the problems and the magnitude of the problem, but also it's given them the opportunity to meet them where they're at. Sometimes these are easier solutions than they think. You know, they think this is an unsolvable problem today, right now, but there are some little tweaks that can be done. I mean, obviously things like being flexible in schedules is the number one thing you can do. Having said that, a large majority of Alaska's economy and the jobs that we have here are not flexible. They are, you know, hitch work or seasonal employees who need to be running around for 14 hours a day. And so, you know, we try to provide them with a toolkit of here's the easy places to start. And then here's where, you know, investment on your front comes. And then, you know, the greater investment on the statewide level or local community levels, too. I think that's important, too. You know, the task force is all about what's happening at the state, but all the communities need to be taking a look at what they can be doing as well to be a part of the solution. So it's everybody. As I said at the beginning of the program, this is an all hands on deck situation.
And for both of you, would you say it's primarily finding care at all, or is it more an affordability problem for families? Which one is at the higher level there?
I think affordability for okay. Quality care.
Stephanie?
I would say it's access. I think it's all of the above, which is a challenge. Okay. You know,
it's just difficult all the way around.
We've seen the childcare sector struggle so much, and we're highlighting many parts of that. And I think to underscore that, you know, over the last 4 years, we've had lots of one-time funding and still have seen childcare close and struggle. And so now we need really to figure out a sustainable ongoing funding to ensure we have a viable childcare sector. And that includes the small businesses with a well-paid workforce to make sure they're there for families.
All right. Thank you so much to Katie Capozzi, President and CEO of the Alaska Chamber and a member of the Governor's Task Force on Childcare, and Stephanie Berglund, who is the CEO of THRED, a childcare resource and referral network, and also a task force member. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Tobin Shelby helped us out today. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.